welcome to the Alexi Sale podcast number 4. This is a show that's all about honesty. This is the show where I speak truth to power. And I also speak Spanish to a duck. Hola, señor pato, ¿qué tal? Quack, 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 quack. También fantástico, fantástico. Señor pato, creo que Tom Watson, sí, Tom Watson. Tom Watson es un coño. ¿Qué piensas? ¿Qué tú piensas? Quack, 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 quack. ¿Verdad, verdad, verdad? ¿Y Keir Starmer? Quack, 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 quack. Increíble, gracias. Okay, so we thought we'd do a kind of, I thought I would do a kind of review of 2020, and obviously I'm not going to touch on the, you know, the events that everybody knows, but being, for me in a way, apart from the ordinary sadnesses of lockdown and, you know, the disruption of this year, for me personally, it's also been a year of loss, a year of people I know who've died. Now, they're not, none of these people who've died are really completely central to my life. They're more like, I mean, background action. You know, background action is, you know, in movies where you have what used to be called extras, now called supporting artists. You know, and they kind of populate the backgrounds of scenes. That's perhaps a bit dismissive about these people, but nevertheless, these are people who give meaning, kind of colour to your life without being completely central. And I've lost a number of people this year. One, somebody I hadn't seen for many years, but I actually got the text that he had died while I was doing Tai Chi, and it's actually quite, if you ever want to try it, it's actually quite difficult to do Tai Chi just after you've heard that somebody's died. But this was a guy called, an old tour manager of mine called Kenny Smith, and somebody texted me and said he'd died of cancer. Now, Kenny Smith was a really interesting guy. He'd been to the same school as me, but he was a few years older, and he'd somehow fallen in with the Beatles' entourage. He was actually, I think he was either Ringo's or George's personal assistant for many years. And when he came to be my tour manager, he'd fallen on hard times, really. One of the things about Kenny was that he had this kind of, like a lot of people in the music business, he had this kind of samurai kind of stillness. And also, when he was your man, he really was your man. I remember when we were driving up the motorway and Linda would be giving me earache from the back seat, and I'd say, Kenny, the girl with the glasses, throw her out. And before you could say anything, the car would have pulled over to the hard shoulder and he'd have the back door open before I could say, Kenny, no, it doesn't matter. It was also the people that promoted my concerts back in the 80s were a big music biz agency called Wasted Talent, and they had bands like REM and The Police. And my agent at Wasted Talent, Bob Gold, had never bothered to change the contract for what's called the get-in. Now, the get-in is where you get your equipment in to the building, and obviously usually this would be masses of speakers and lights, and so in the contract, there'd be a requirement for, like, what they called humpers, 10 humpers, big, burly men. The thing was that I didn't have any equipment. All I had was a cardboard box with a pink hippo glove puppet in it. And so Kenny would carry this box proudly, and there'd be all these humpers standing around going, what the fucking hell's going on here? We've got all these coats of box with a pink hippo glove puppet in it, cool. But Kenny would carry that box with pride. One day, in the middle of a tour, Kenny said to me, look, Lex, there's a band also managed by Wasted Talent who are a very small band, have got massive debts, and they're touring beer kellers. And Wasted Talent just want me to go off and tour manage them. So I said, yeah, sure. So Kenny went off and tour managed this little band, massive debts, playing in beer kellers and rough and ready venues, pubs around Britain. And he came back after a few weeks and he said, well, I've got on so well with this this band, Lex, that they want me to manage them. I said, well, Kenny, you're on a good £50 a week with me. You don't want to be going off managing some band. But he said, I think this is my break. I really want to go off and manage this band. So I said, well, fair enough. As long as you can fix me up with a replacement, fair enough. Go off and manage this band. And so he did. And do you know what the name of that band was? Talal, do you know what the name of that band was?
Bucks Fizz.
No, the name of that band was the Eurythmics. And so Kenny became the manager of that band, the Eurythmics. And Kenny, of course, lived in Crouch End, and Dave Stewart also lived in Crouch End. And of course, that's the basis of the famous story. You know the story about, you know, is Dave in? The Bob Dylan story? You don't know that story? You don't know that story?
No.
The story is, well, and it's a true story. Bob Dylan was recording at Dave Stewart's studio, which was in Crouch End, in church in Crouch End, and was staying in the area. One day, Bob Dylan leaves his hotel, and he wants to go round to Dave Stewart's house. So he gets the address wrong. So he goes round to this house in Crouch End, knocks on the door, and says to the woman who comes to the door, is Dave in? And this is a woman who's married to Dave, who's like a plumber. So she says no, but he'll be back from work in an hour. So Bob Dylan says, thank you, ma'am. I'll come in, ma'am. So Bob Dylan comes in, sits in the front room. When Dave gets home from his plumbing job, his wife says to him, Dave, Bob Dylan's in the living room. He's asking for you. And that's where the story runs out, really. I don't know what happened after that. But, yeah, it's a true story. It's an apocryphal story, but it's true. Bob Dylan went round to this house, said, Dave in. No, Dave did live there. And do you know who that Dave is now? That Dave is Dave Grohl of... That Dave is David Blaine. He was a plumber, but Bob Dylan convinced him to become a magician. That Dave is now David Copper. That Dave is now David Cameron, the former cretin who was Prime Minister of Britain, and is now... that's who that Dave is, Talal. That's who he is. That Dave is now Aung San Suu Kyi. I don't know, this is running out of steam.
Just the rapper, Dave.
That Dave. Do you know who that Dave was, Talal? That Dave was the rapper, Dave.
Why is that story famous?
Well, because it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's like, you know, Bob Dylan goes round to this ordinary bloke's house, all confused, and says, is Dave in? And his wife says, yeah. And
so he was looking for a different Dave.
He was looking for Dave Stewart. Have I not made that clear? Is this entire fucking anecdote wasted? You're going to have to make sense of this in the edit. let's do it again. So... Bob Dylan is recording at Dave Stewart's studio in Crouch End. And on his day off, he thinks, oh, I'll go round to Dave's house. He gets the address wrong. He goes to a modest house in Crouch End, knocks on the door. He says, Is Dave in, ma'am? Now, she's married to Dave, so she says, yeah, he'll be back from work in an hour. Bob Dylan comes in, sits down, has a Jaffa cake, and a Nescafe, which he's too polite to refuse. And then when Dave, the plumber, comes home from work, he says, his wife says, Bob Dylan's in the living room waiting for you. And, you know, and do you know who that Dave is now? Etc.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah.
I needed that.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, Death has been ever present in my life this year. And it's something I think about quite a lot. Years ago, I was published by Hodder and Stoughton, a big publishers who covered a lot of areas. And I remember having lunch with my editor there, Rupert, and he said after lunch, he was going to have a meeting with one of their authors, a woman who wrote a book about angels. And this woman's, the central theory of this woman's writing was that every time you saw a white feather, it meant that an angel had been by. So I think that obviously the angels hang around a lot in duvet factories. That is the main place where angels will be. So I would love for there to be an afterlife. I would love for there to be some existence after this consciousness. I would love for my consciousness to die. But I don't believe it. I mean, if, say I die, right? I die defending Jeremy Corbyn from some ninja assassins. Or I die, I'm on the stage at Sadler's Wells and I'm dancing with Pina Bausch's dance theatre of Wuppertal. And people are amazed at the beauty of my movements. And they say, wow, that guy's 95. That fat bald guy. He's 95, but yet he's moving in the most incredible way. And they rise to their feet and applaud at the kind of ecstatic beauty, the majesty, the elegance of my movement. So at that point, I die, right? I die. I expire. My heart, at the age of 95, dancing on stage at Sadler's Wells with Pina Bausch's Tanz Theatre of Wuppertal, I expire. Now, everything goes black for a few seconds, like in a deep sleep, a darkness. But then suddenly I wake again, and I'm dead, and I'm in hell, okay? And there's like monkeys plucking at my liver. For all eternity, I think there's monkeys, gibbons, plucking at my liver. And I think fucking great. I think fucking fantastic. Yes, there's monkeys, gibbons, plucking at my liver, yet I continue to exist. Death is not real. Death is not an ending. I continue to exist. And I'd be fucking pleased, and over time I'd become friends with the gibbons. I mean, we'd become, you know, I mean, we've got a working relationship. I'd get to know their names, you know, and, you know, we'd become friends over time. How could we fail not to? And also, I think I'd have the pleasure for all eternity of seeing Piers Morgan having his nose hairs plucked out of his nose for all eternity by pelicans. I don't know why my idea of hell is a badly run safari park. But if you look at, you know, those Hieronymus Bosch patents in the Rijksmuseum, wherever, if you look at the bottom, you'll see a little sign that says Alton Towers. Anyway, unfortunately, I think that that death is the final thing. And so I'll just talk about one more friend that I lost this year, a story about them, is Andy Gill, the guitarist of the band Gang of Four. Andy was very ill, and he was actually in... I went to see him, I think it was in January, just before he died, and he was in the ICU in St. Thomas's. And his wife said he hadn't been eating, and so I took him some food. I took him some crackers and manchego cheese and membrillo, you know. Si, membrillo, señor Pato, membrillo. Quack, 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 quack. Si, 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 claro, claro. So I took him some membrillo, and he ate a little, but some of the crackers fell on the floor, and I just picked them up absentmindedly and put them back on the plate. And I was having me and Andy were chatting, you know, and it's very absorbing conversation. And just absentmindedly, I was nibbling at the crackers, these crackers. And then I suddenly realised, I think, fuck me, I'm eating crackers that have been on the floor of a fucking ICU, right? A fucking ICU. I said to the nurse, look, you know, I've been eating these crackers, they've been on the floor, but this is like the cleanest place in the world, isn't it? She said, fuck no. She said, the stuff in those walls, we can't get rid of. The stuff so deadly in those walls, we can't get rid of it. But nevertheless, I have it. So maybe I am immortal. Maybe the lesson I should take for that is that I am never going to die, because I've eaten crackers off the floor of an ICU and survived. So maybe, like Superman, I am immortal. And another friend, well, we can talk about this together, really, but the reason that this podcast came about was because a very dear friend of mine called Mustafa Khoguti, who's a Syrian journalist, and he died, and he was the father of Talal, who was... Hello. Who does this podcast for me. And one story that we were talking about at your dad's memorial was that your dad, of course, one of the things that happened to him was he was a hostage in the Iran embassy siege.
Yeah, 1980.
He was a hostage in the Iran embassy siege. And at the memorial, the cameraman, Sim Harris, who he became very great friends with afterwards, they said he talked about how they had the memorial every year. They had not a memorial, sorry, but
a reunion.
A reunion, every year. And they had a reunion every year, and because nobody else could really understand, you know, could understand the things they'd been through. But in later years, which I thought was kind of sweet, that in later years, the SAS men started coming to the SAS men who'd rescued them would come to the reunion as well. And they'd come through the windows. with Heckler and Koch MP5s, because they don't know how, any other way to come into a building except via the window. So yeah, so that's yeah. But it was. I don't know what you were saying about your dad, really. I can't remember how I met him. Really, I think I've known him. I think he was friends with my friend Wasim.
Yeah,
and I don't know what else. What else is there to say? Really?
Yeah, not much, but. That's how this came together.
Yeah. And we talked about it, didn't we, at the memorial, just doing something together. And now here it is, really. And so, yeah, out of death comes a podcast.
All right, Prometheus, that's enough. He's the one who had his liver plucked out every day, wasn't it?
No, for me, I don't know. My Greek, you know, I wish I could talk about, like, Greek myths. I think I'll be, because that's the only reason, well, people think Boris Johnson's clever, isn't it? Because he said, that's like, oh yes, remember the myth of Sisyphus? You know, had an eternally melting cornetto? All you need to appear to be intelligent is to be able to talk about Greek shit that happened in 2000. I can't really. And the myth, Linda would know. We'll ask her later.
I'll fact check it and leave it in if it's true.
All right. So 2020 has been a year of loss. I've lost some friends who populate my life. So if anybody wants to be my friend, there's a vacancy, you know. I'm a great friend at first. Later on, though, you have to be prepared for the weeping phone calls in the middle of the night. That is a kind of job requirement. You know what I mean? He said to me that I can't, and I don't think that. if you're down for that, then I'll be holding auditions at the Welsh Centre on the Grazing Road in February. Send your CV if you want to be my friend. Send your CV to whatever my email address is. Speaking of email address, Talal, would you like to read out some of the emails that we've had?
Sure thing, Alexi. Okay, this is from Danny Cook. Hi, Alexi. I'd like to hear about the creation of your Jeffrey the Tube Train book with Oscar Zarate. I got it as a kid and loved it.
Thank you, Danny. Oscar Zarate is still one of my best friends, and we've actually been for a walk on the Heath, on Hampstead Heath with him earlier today. So, maybe that might... Oscar was saying today that he's been in Britain now. I think in May he would have been in Britain for 50 years. And the thing is that Oscar, his English isn't very good, but his Spanish isn't very good either. Nevertheless, I think that'd be an interesting. We could do a, like the Renica Marshall thing. Let's have an interview show with Oscar. Yeah, and we can talk about Jeffrey the Tube Train.
Nick asks, is there any hope? That's it.
Is there any hope? I thought he's got any hope of Bobby Chariot, you know, return, or is there any hope of is the hope of Stoke getting back into the Premiership? Hope. Well, it's a choice, isn't it? I think it was Emily Dickinson called hope that thing with feathers. I think implying that hope is a fragile kind of diaphanous. Ridiculous thing, really. So I suppose the choice is whether you have no hope and are occasionally pleasantly surprised, or you are perpetually in a state of hope and then from time to time have your hopes smashed and ground under the feet of reality. So I guess... you know, it's a choice, really. But I think those are maybe a bit binary, but those are really the only choices with hope.
Okay, this is an interesting one, and I don't expect you to have the answer straight away, but this is from someone called Jamie Sale.
All right.
Hello, Alexi. Before my grandfather died, he mentioned that we are related on his family's side.
Mm-hmm.
On his family's side. It would be interesting to find out exactly how we are related. All the best, mate, and a happy new year. Now that you're... digitally available and we have an email address, I imagine we're going to get floods of long-lost relatives trying to contact you, Alexei. Is this something you're interested in?
Not really. I mean, I'm not interested. Sale is actually a Manx name. Sale, Doyle, Quail are all names from the Isle of Man. But it's fairly rare, really. In when there used to be things called phone books, ask your granddad what they were, kids. There was only about 7 sales in the phone book. I know there's a sale, there's an Emma sale who runs a kind of sex club, isn't it, called Killing Kittens? I don't know if we're related. I was never really interested in family. I think I had a kind of block about it, really, for various reasons we won't go into here, but I am more interested now. I am holding auditions for new friends. Maybe I'm also interested in... I'm more interested, really, in knowing about my family now than I ever was before, which is to say, not that much.
I'm going to squash 2 emails together here. I've had 2 emails regarding the Nice People Party.
Shukran, yeah.
Something you've come up with. Sean wants to know how you feel about possibly becoming a political leader of sorts.
Yeah.
And then someone else, Jonathan, asks this. Loving the podcast, following on from episode 2, where you mentioned what the new UK Socialist Party should call itself.
Yeah.
He has also spent much of 2020 pondering this. And he said, what group of people has the country unanimously praised and not uttered a bad word about in 2020? Nurses. So I propose we create a party with the officials consisting primarily of respected nurses, doctors and other healthcare professionals with socialist beliefs, and we simply call it the Nurses Party. They would stand a good chance of getting votes, not just from socialist voters, but from the general population who've praised healthcare workers this year. What do you think, Johnny from Newcastle?
No, thank you for that, Johnny. Well, yeah, I agree. Obviously, your analysis that is correct that nurses have been, but I think one of the distressing thing. There was a Republican, a strategist for the Republican Party in the United States called Karl Rove, who worked for Bush Jr., I think. And his theory was you should always attack people on their strengths, not on their weaknesses. And so I think you'll be amazed, and it's one of the things that just as with Jeremy Corbyn, a lifelong anti-racist, 50, 60 years working against racism, how quickly the media came to tag him as a racist, that he was called a racist by people who really were racist. So I think and this perhaps relates back to your hope question, one of the things you would be amazed at if we did call it the Nurses Party, how quickly you would find nurses being decried as spongers, scroungers, drug addicts, too rough with those bed baths. If nurses were somehow involved in projecting socialist policies, you'd be amazed at how quickly their reputation would be trashed. But yeah, maybe.
This is from Billy Smart. I would be keen to hear a similar reunion for Didn't You Kill My Brother with Pauline Melville and David Stafford. Is that...
Yeah. I'm still in touch with both of those people. And so Didn't You Kill My Brother? Yeah, it could be an interesting conversation. That's thank you, Billy. Billy Smart, I love your circus. I hate circuses. Yeah, that's also a good, seeing as this reunion thing seems to be working out pretty well, let's do it. Future show, Pauline Melville, David Stafford, a discussion of the comic strip movie that we wrote together, Didn't You Kill My Brother?
Okay, finally, Alexei, this is from David. It would be interesting to hear about Alexei being cast in the Golden Girls sitcom and then being replaced by Cheech Marin. I agree, David. I want to hear about this too.
Yeah, well, you're asking about me. In 1992, I replaced Bea Arthur when she left the Golden Girls. I replaced her. I think that is a story for another time. It is on my Wikipedia page, that fact that you've picked up, that I was replaced by Cheech Marin. But that is an entire podcast. But in the future, yeah, let's do a Golden Let's do a Golden Palace podcast where I tell the entire story of my unfortunate involvement with the Golden Girls. Yeah, that'll be a whole show. Thank you so much for your emails. And if you have any more, send them to alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Nice to get some women. Oh, yeah, so thank you very much for listening. Y entonces, señor Pato, adiós. Quack, 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 quack. Claro, sí, 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 señor Pato, señor Pato. Muy, muy cómico. Quack, 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 quack. Adiós, señor Pato. You have been listening to the Alexis L podcast, written by me and produced and edited by Talal Karkouzi. Music by Tarbush Records. And don't forget, I also have my own YouTube channel now, and it's just called Alexis L, and you can see my lockdown bike rides there, so why not have a look at that as well? Subscribe. Yeah, subscribe. Thank you for Audio Boom for hosting us, and we'll see you next time. Próxima vez, señor Pato. Próxima vez. He's just being unpleasant now. Why? You know, you were nice as pie when we were on the air.